Hello and welcome to yet another edition of Editing Aloud. And today we find ourselves in a situation where both the opposition Democratic Alliance and the governing ruling ANC are in all kinds of trouble. And I'm going to ask my guests on the panel to help us sort it out, because in Cape Town, the DA says that it has now removed Mayor Patricia de Lille as a party member, which means that she is no longer the mayor. She says she is still the mayor. The deputy mayor says there is no mayor until the caucus votes. It's been a really messy period, Sikonati, for the DA, and I think the party was even admitting as much yesterday that it's done itself damage.
It's a classic case of a political party losing the best possible opportunity and destroying itself from within. They are basically firing those voters that Patricia de Lille brought with her.
Yeah.
But the real fact of the matter is there is only a vacancy once the party has declared to the IEC that there is a vacancy. And Patricia de Lille says she's going to interdict the IEC from holding a vote because there's no vacancy. And the whole thing here is how the DA has gone about it all. Why has the DA failed to charge Patricia de Lille?
Well, this is the interesting thing. I mean, I don't know, Lukanya, whether any of this, whether you, as you get used to being back here, whether any of this looks familiar to you in British politics or Scottish politics. But they developed a whole lot of charges, right, against Patricia de Lille. And you know, this has been going on now for months. And then suddenly she said the other day, I think on Eusebius McKayser's radio show, that, you know, if the DA wants me to go, then I'll go. And the DA then invokes a clause in its constitution which says if you threaten to resign, then you lose your membership. But she was, what she said was conditional. If they want me to go, then I'll go. And so they've leapt on that instead of the painstakingly collected case against her. Just taken the shortcut. I mean, politicians do stupid things, don't they?
Coming as an outsider, I say my job is to ask the stupid, simple question.
Yeah.
And I said, what has she done? And my colleague who's been here all this time didn't know either.
Yeah.
So it seems to be not a lot of clarity about what this process is about,
right,
and what the actual charges are.
No.
And,
I mean, yesterday the party was supposed to release details of his charges against her, I think yesterday or the day before. And I don't think they have. I mean, there's no mention of them on social media, which surely there would have been by now. There's no mention of them in the paper this morning. Hillary, it sounds really weird. I mean, I know that you concentrate mainly on the economy, but Cape Town's a big deal, you know, and in South Africa, it's an important city. It's now effectively not leaderless, but people in Cape Town must be very confused about what's happening to their city.
Yeah, we really don't know what the backstory is. But I think the big picture, which is the two aspects of it which are really disturbing. The first is that the DA had tried to position itself as an alternate party of governance.
Yeah.
Not just an opposition party. And that was what the Cape Town effort was and the Western Cape effort was and taking some of the other metros, such as Johannesburg itself. And this has just, now it's tearing itself apart in the most humiliating way. And that positioning has just been destroyed, really. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think, you know, anyone now thinks of it as a party of governance. And the other aspect of it is that they actually did, apart from the drought, they did really well in Cape Town. It was on all the numbers, and I've seen the World Bank did a comparison of cities at some point. It was, in fact, the best governed city, and it was the best city in South Africa in which to do business.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're taking all of that and they're sort of snatching defeat, as it were, from the jaws of victory.
It is extraordinary.
And that is the thing. The DA has built itself, its raison d'etre has been due process.
Yeah.
Due process, therefore, demands, if you've got evidence of any wrongdoing, be it criminal wrongdoing or even just internal party discipline, charge the person, present your evidence, allow the person an opportunity to defend herself. They demand this day in, day out of the ANC, and now they've got this opportunity. They've formulated charges against Patricia de Lille in January. If you're so confident of your case, surely you will put it to the accused and then find them guilty.
Yeah.
They
because
have failed
as the De Lille saga progresses, There's no question but that Musi Maimane, the leader of the party, is under pressure over talking about things like white privilege, and you can see on Twitter senior MPs from the DA making light of the whole notion of white privilege and calling it a sort of an old recast, old sort of shibboleth, as it were. How does this all play out for the party next year, or whenever the next election happens to be? I mean, they are much weaker now, surely, electorally, than they were a year ago.
They absolutely are, and they've lost again, just like the EFF, their biggest campaigner. They've lost Jacob Zuma.
Yeah.
And they now are running around like a headless chicken. And they won the city of Cape Town with a two-thirds majority with Patricia de Lille in charge. And everything you've just said about the city of Cape Town, just look at the city of Cape Town and compare it to Johannesburg. Of course, they will have an excuse that we've only been here for 2 years. But look at it now. They've lost it and they have weakened themselves totally.
Have you seen this sort of thing happen, Luke, in politics while you've been away?
I mean, politics, like politicians everywhere, they look after themselves rather than look for the people. I think that's why this story is quite sad. It's not necessarily because of the DA, because the idea that's why they portrayed themselves as a standard for good governance, that they would take the model from Cape Town elsewhere. Yeah. Now they've loaded all these other metros. And now we're going to go back. What's where we might actually have a one-party democracy again, when we're actually on the verge of actually having a proper competitive system.
Yeah.
I think that's what really matters. No, but I don't really care so much about Cape Town, about de Lille, but I think that's the bigger picture.
It's a serious thing. I mean, I remember this time last year, I remember being told by a very senior person in the DA that they were looking at about 32% for the next general election, and that's got to have gone away by now. What has happened to the EFF, I don't know. I mean, they'll make some progress, I suppose.
I think a lot of the gains that they made were because of ANC people not voting, switching their votes to the DA, but not voting at all. So now that they've lost that advantage too.
Absolutely. And then in the ANC, I think everybody's enjoyed the exchange between President Cyril Ramaphosa and John Steenhuisen, the DA chief whip, yesterday, in which Steenhuisen, who is an aggressive and quite a good parliamentarian, I have to say, I like watching him, was told to shut up by the president, not one but about four times, before the speaker called Cyril Ramaphosa to some sort of order. Well, but there was strategy in that, I presume. I mean, it's the kind of opportunity I would have thought that Cyril would have looked for, just to show a bit of spunk.
I actually thought it was quite tame. I mean, I've listened to Prime Minister's questions. I mean, like you go to see in Westminster, that was actually quite nothing compared to what you'd see there week by week.
Yeah,
which can be frustrating in a way, because it does let the population down in a sense, because people end up then not actually answering questions in any kind of substantial kind of way.
Yeah.
But it was actually good for people to see some fire in him. Maybe there's been an element that has been too polite. Yeah. He agrees with everybody. Like, we still don't know what exactly his stance is on things.
And he was clever, wasn't he, Sika, to back Maimane when he said, you know, we will come to your support, because Maimane has been using the phrase white privilege in some of his speeches recently. And some of his more liberal, well, I don't know whether they're more liberal or more conservative colleagues, have taken offence at it, and as I say, have been tweeting, not behind his back because he's on Twitter as well, but it's caused some offence in the party. Is the DA, Hillary? I mean, you'll know these politics. Is the DA going to split? I mean, is there a split? There is already a split. I mean, there's a split about colour, for a start. It seems to be about colour.
I'm no expert on the DA, but there seem to be multi-way splits, and I suppose one of the reasons that Cyril Ramaphosa's comment was so endearing was that it sort of couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. I mean, Steenhuisen just comes across as... The leadership issues in the DA are really problematic. Musi Maimane has been absolutely absent over this Patricia de Lille thing.
Yeah.
Steenhuisen seems to call all sorts of shots.
Yeah.
The new...
But Steenhuisen,
Natasha Mazzoni, the very
Judaism is that he's a Musi supporter rather than a critic.
But what the leadership politics of the party are, I think, is there something disturbing
about
the whole
thing. How does it manage to be so opaque? Why don't we know how the DA works?
Maybe that the DA was not really a proper political party in the sense in terms of its formation, or not formed behind common principles, behind ideology. I mean, if you look at people in the ANC, whether they come from Sandton or from Soweto, they seem to have a similar views on the views, whether it's the economy. Yeah. Like, so they have an ideological thing that binds them together. I mean, what binds him with people from Kokoletu? It's hard to actually imagine that there is, like, on an ideological or even kind of level. So it sounds like a bit like our paper says, marriage of convenience. And those don't normally last very long, do they?
And we don't know what, I mean, their economic policy is, you know, hardly an alternative to anything. They haven't, even as opposition.
What is it?
Well, this is a very good question. It's certainly not different enough to ANC policy to give us anything to think about.
They keep talking about being the big offering is opportunity, which in a society like this has surely got to be a bit ambitious.
You see, the biggest problem with the DA, and this is where you are going to see the divide, the fact that the black middle class see the DA as the best alternative to the ANC as it is, does not actually mean that they have forgotten about the past and what needs to be done to fix the past. Yeah. The first thing is to acknowledge it. Therefore, there is white privilege. If you now, and by the way, that is how they lost the lady from Lindiwe Mazibuko on black economic empowerment. They disagreed on what the DA position should be. There we go now. Musi Maimane is back exactly where Lindiwe Mazibuko was 5 years ago. White privilege. And you cannot talk about BEE without addressing that matter. You cannot talk about the past without addressing the future, without addressing the past. Yeah. And that's where they will disagree. Yeah. And Herman Mashaba and all the other black leaders have already stood up and rallied behind Musi and said, we didn't join the DA to defend black privilege, to defend white privilege. Yeah. We joined the DA to take South Africa forward.
Yeah.
But how do you take South Africa forward without looking backwards first, acknowledging the past, do what you can and move on?
Is it because the white membership or leadership or parliamentary leadership of the DA is scared of losing literally their jobs? I mean, does anybody know what the parliamentary pension scheme is? Is it a defined benefit or defined?
No idea, but I think it might be something deeper than that.
The public office bearers pension fund.
Well, it's probably a portion of your salary. You know,
absolutely,
like
it's
the
a defined.
Pensions were.
It's a
they
defined benefit fund.
That.
But remember now, Natasha Matsune is not thinking about retirement. She's thinking about leading the party.
But for
the party to be sustainable,
she's feisty and she's good.
Has to do to itself what South Africa has to do to BEE.
Yeah.
The white leadership of the DA have to work themselves out of jobs by recruiting black leaders and members in order for the party to survive.
Yeah.
If they are going to hold on to the leadership, the party is going nowhere.
It seems to me that there's a big enough group of MPs there who describe themselves as liberal, who would rather just be liberal than in government, you know, and would prefer to...
And hold on to that privilege.
For sure. Absolutely. Anyway, interesting discussion about the political parties. We'll stop it there and be back after this break. Welcome back. Hillary, emerging markets are taking a bit of a hammering. The dollar's strong. Is it Iran and Donald Trump pulling out of the Iran peace deal? Is it something else? What's happening?
It predated that. I think it was particularly driven by U.S. Treasury yields going over 3%. So the gap, which emerging markets offered this much higher yield, much higher interest rate than you could earn in the sort of zero rate advanced countries, particularly the US. And that was why we've had capital washing into South Africa and other emerging markets over the past few years in search of yield.
But our yield here is about 8%, right?
7.8, yeah.
7.8. And so American 3% trumps
that. It was close to zero, and it's now, it's just when it went over 3% for the first time, this is the yield on US 10-year treasury, that was like quite a break.
Yeah.
And I think the dollar's been strengthening lately on better prospects for the US economy. And we've been waiting to see if there's going to be an emerging market rout.
Yeah.
And it's not a crash. It's not like, you know, the 2013 or late 90s crashes. But there's certainly been a turn in global sentiment to away from emerging markets, and we've been hit by it, but there are others such as Argentina which have been hit really savage. The sort of really vulnerable emerging markets have been absolutely hammered.
Really?
Though South Africa, the Rand was doing so well on the Ramaphosa thing. We thought we were sort of wonderful, but in fact we were reminded that we are a small, open, emerging market, as we always were.
And what effect is this? What effect does the strength of the dollar and improving economic outlook do for Trump? Do you think, Luke? Does it make him feel more secure? Does Stormy Daniels lurk in the background? How do you read that situation?
I mean, there is that sort of old famous quote from the Clinton era, it's the economy is stupid.
Yeah.
But then if you look back, say, to the UK, when John Major was voted out, the economy was actually booming. So it can go both ways. And to the extent to which these things can overcome his other challenges, I think it's not really clear. I mean, if you look at the Obama era, I mean, Obama should be lauded as one of the greatest leaders ever, but certain the population see him as a bit of a failure, even though he inherited an economy in a mess and left it to record unemployment.
Is this swing in the American economy just part of a cycle? Or because it was on the up when Obama was...
It was on the up, Well, Obama, as Luke said, turned it around, absolutely. Yeah. But it wasn't up. And of course, there's the sort of additional stimulus which Trump has put in, probably inappropriately.
The tax cuts.
Yeah. Everyone would argue, but that is a boost. So that's the stimulus, and the US economy has been looking good.
Yeah, yeah. And Hillary, auditors in this country, what is happening? You know, KPMG. Not a week goes by now when some large client doesn't say goodbye to KPMG. I'll come to you as well, Sukhanati, and all of you. I mean, how long can a firm that big take this kind of hammering?
I think it can't stay that big. That's the answer. And, you know, the merits of it are I think what perhaps KPMG didn't really realize is there's a kind of a bloodlust. Somebody's got to pay for what Zuma and the Guptas did to South Africa. So some of the service providers who had poor judgment and got sort of embroiled in this, even if they didn't do anything wrong, are going to take the fall. And, you know, even companies for whom they've done absolutely more than adequate audits, and KPMG was the leading financial services audit firm in South Africa.
Really?
But even companies to whom who acknowledge they provided very good service and they have no issues with their service are under pressure from their shareholders, from their stakeholders to get rid of them. So we've had Barclays, which is one of its biggest clients, the Auditor General, one of the biggest clients, and there's a couple of other big ones, and there's an AGM season, you know, that we're in now, and chances are that other companies' boards will be recommending that they be replaced.
What happened to an auditing firm collapses in our economy? I mean, we had Arthur Anderson.
I think the question is, will they collapse or will they? The language they're now talking, because I did speak to them over the weekend, the language they're now talking is they have to readjust their business model. And what I think that means is they've got to downsize to an appropriate level so that they can rebuild themselves, you know, do what they've said since September they're going to do, put the integrity and the quality and the judgment checks in place, weather the storm, and then try over the next few years to sort of rebuild their franchise.
Yeah.
But if, assuming they do survive, and they probably will, because they've still got lots of clients to service, they've still got KPMG International's multinational clients to service. And it would be a tragedy, really, for South Africa if they lost them. I do have to say that. I think they're not going to be a big four firm in South Africa anymore. That's what it's starting to sound like.
I beg to differ about it being a tragedy for South Africa if they survived. You started out very well. Someone needs to pay. And KPMG, with that authority, with that stamp of professionalism that they carried, allowed Jacob Zuma and the Guptas to run away with it. They have cost us at least 100 billion rand. someone needs to pay. Yes, what they did for Eskom, for the Guptas.
What about what PwC did? Didn't notice a thing at SAA for like
definitely
10 years.
Someone
what about what
has been,
did?
Someone,
didn't notice a thing at
Stanhope. Someone
Stanhope.
Definitely
you kind of
has been caught.
Profession pain.
Someone has been caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
Who?
And that is KPMG.
Well, a couple of partners have been caused with their hand
definitely.
In the cookie,
and,
cookie
and,
jar.
And for that, someone needs to pay. Bell Pottinger is gone. Konki is gone. We need... Konki
shouldn't have gone either. That was the Auditor General being irresponsible, in my view.
The Auditor General was absolutely spot on. You and I have been
and why
paying
wasn't
for
he
all
taking
this fraud for this
up with him a year before? Why didn't he
because
know?
He didn't
why
know.
Did he do nothing about it?
Because he didn't know. And because, just like all those people, 50 years of investments in Steinhoff didn't know. Now that they do know, what do you do about it? The fact that someone has stolen things before and you didn't notice, the minute you catch them, let them pay for all the 50 years. Now, the great thing about KPMG is that those are highly skilled people, very sought after. The brand must die. The people walk out
but
and
Sigurd,
definitely
the,
go
what
start all over.
I mean
auditors and chartered accountants are highly sought after in this country. There will be no job losses in
actually,
that instance.
I must tell you
they
something.
Will be
some
absorbed.
Of them have already been lost to the country. One, some of their senior partners have left. Not only KPMG, they have left South Africa. They are now in Europe.
Are you talking about the corrupt ones? Do we
no,
need them?
No,
in
the
first
uncorrupt
place?
Ones. I can yes. I the uncorrupt
well,
ones.
You do some good
partners
people
are
because
walking out of there.
You definitely will lose people, but you will gain a whole lot more. What we do need here, they have. I could use a word that I can't use on TV, but they
write
really.
It down.
You want me to use? South Africa was right at the top of financial regulation
yeah.
and everything. And KPMG messed all over that, together, of course, with our lax regulation. Someone has to pay for it.
And our lax boards of directors who didn't
definitely.
Notice a thing either. I don't
someone,
think it's just
someone has
profession.
To pay for it. And it seems at this point it has to be KPMG. Konki is too small to have an effect. We need to have one of the big four. No one should be too big to fail.
Can I just ask what happened when Arthur Andersen closed down here?
KPMG mopped them up.
Okay.
That whole culture went to KPMG.
But then, so let's say KPMG falls and there'll be people around and they'll get jobs known with PwC and Ernst & Young.
Yeah,
and
then we'll have a big three instead of a big four.
We'll have a big three instead of a big four. And then what happened? Do we break them up?
On this show,
can
I have said numerous times that it is the Reserve Bank that has insisted on appointing the big four. It has insisted. You build up capacity because you now have the clients. You don't build up capacity in terms of hiring auditors to wait for accounts.
Yeah,
you
sure.
get accounts which the Reserve Bank must approve in relation to the banks. And now the Auditor General has to go to Grant Thornton to all the...
Grant Thornton doesn't have the capacity, doesn't even want to do
yes, the capacity follows the account.
Auditors are very specialised. And you don't just... You can sort of shift them from one firm to the other, but they train the clerks
Hillary, the Banks
from
Act,
graduation.
The Banks Act
it's not just the
only
registrar.
Says the Reserve Bank has to approve
yes.
these auditors.
But it's...
These, all of these auditors
are
trained... You
can't just put any audit firm
yes, you can't just put in any audit firm, but that firm that you will put on will only build the capacity once it has the revenue, the bankable revenue. That's how it works. You go to Standard Bank and say, I can do your audit because 3,000 people have just lost their jobs at KPMG. They are doing that good job. We're going to put these measures in place. These are the people trained as well as the others that work at KPMG, the same accounting schools. The Reserve Bank will still be supervising them. The Reserve Bank just made it a tradition to appoint these four. It's not that they were the only ones that can do it. No one is going to go hire 20 auditors when they have no jobs for them. That hence, you have to have the bankable contract from the bank, and then you go get the people. It's that easy. KPMG has to die, and the sooner the better.
Well,
we'll have to agree to disagree on that.
We will. Let's agree to disagree. I quickly wanted just to talk about SARS and Tom Moyane challenging his dismissal or his suspension, and the very intriguing appearance of Dali Mpofu, the chairman of the Economic Freedom Fighters, as his advocate. Does this happen, Luke, in your experience, Dali, we know, wears these two hats, and he can't really turn down a request if he doesn't feel conflicted. But he might be conflicted in this instance. I mean, because this is an opportunity for him to have a go at Cyril Ramaphosa, a political opponent, surely.
I mean, I don't really have much of background of this, yeah. but on the face of it, yes, there's a professional thing that says he can't turn down this position because he's got a professional obligation and everybody's got a right to legal representation. But we can't pretend there isn't a political story here.
Yeah.
I mean, we know like him and Cyril
over Marikana
and also ANC and EFF. Yeah. So there are, at the face of it.
But if I'm not mistaken, it was Dali who interrogated, or sorry, that's the wrong, probably the wrong word, who cross-examined Cyril at the Marikana Commission and had a lot of fun doing
on
it.
On behalf of the workers.
Yeah, on behalf of the workers.
That's correct.
So that will be amusing to watch. Very lastly, Sukhanathi, your guys are leading, and it's on our board behind us. You've got a case study in looting state-owned companies and using SA Express. Is SA Express still standing? Is it worth anything?
It's still standing because you and I are paying for its continued survival. The actual story we are talking about here is how these companies get looted. Supra Mahuma Pilu decided 3 years ago that let's resume flights between Mahikeng, Pilansberg Airport and OR Tambo, and here's 400 million rands, guys, I'll let you do it. Subsidies to South African Express Airways, which comes from the taxpayer. And that money has been vanishing and being pilfered.
How long would it take to drive to Mahikeng?
3 hours. I drove to Mahikeng 2 weeks ago.
Okay. And the flight was what, 40
so
minutes?
It's just a three-hour thing. The flight would be 40 minutes at most.
Yeah, and so the essence of the story is that you're just taking apart how this money was paid out.
How this money was paid into South African Express Airways, and then the South African Express employees themselves are stealing it.
Yeah, yeah. And does anybody come out of it worthy of going to jail, or is it just one of those corruption stories that the hawks say
they are investigating, okay. including the main man of South African Express Airways, that is Tebogo Brian van Wyk, who handled that contract. Okay. But there's a minister that is unnamed who supposedly received a bribe of 10 million rand. And there are senior government officials in the North.
And does the financial mail know who the minister is?
We do.
Okay. But all will be revealed in subsequent editions. Do get this week's Financial Mail. The story looks very interesting. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be with you again next week.